Perek Shlishi, Sefer Ezra. So we learned in the previous parak that all of the various factions that were there, the Mishpachot, and the sections of Kohanim, Levim, Mishorim, Shoarim, and so on, all first came and settled. And they settled into their cities. They didn't come to Yerushalayim. And this was at the beginning when they came in. And then started the new year in terms of Rosh Hashanah. And this is where we're at here. Vayiga Achodesh Hashvi'i, Uvenei Yisrael Be'arim. And so the seventh month, which is Chodesh Tishrei, and all of Bnei Yisrael in their cities, scattered about, Ve'yasvu ha'am ki'ish echad al Yerushalayim. And so there was just suddenly a spontaneous outreach in which everybody gathered together, didn't take anything, as if they were ish echad, b'lei echad, to come to Yerushalayim in order to finally start concentrating. And we're going to see that there were tremendous political difficulties in what it is that they wanted to do. There was a lot of local antipathy to the Jews having their own new life here, because obviously they understood that that would mean, in the end, it would mean a rejection of those who had settled in the interim in Eretz Yisrael. And if you recall, the last things that we learned in Melachim was about the way in which the Kushim had started settling and taking over, and the Kutim, started settling, that had been brought there by Sancheirev. And so they had amazing problems, and because of that, they were very reluctant to just come in first without testing the waters, without feeling out what was happening, without making, as we'll see later, they made contacts, even, unfortunately, contacts that were illicit in the sense of marriage contacts with the indigenous, at this point, population. And so they finally came together on Rosh Hashanah. Vayokom Yeshua ben Yotzadak. So this is really Yoshua Kohen Gadol is going to be. For some reason, he's mentioned over here before Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel. Even though normally the din is a melech comes before Zerubbabel, was from the Mishpachat HaMlucha, as we spoke about yesterday. And we'll talk about him in a moment. But since over here the issue was taking responsibility for the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash, and what we're going to see is that they actually started bringing korbanot before they even built anything. So therefore, he is the one that is mentioned in the context of this story. Zerubbabel is only secondary, because it's really about the Avodah. And so, Yeshua ben Yotzadak and Echav HaKohanim, Echav meaning, of course, not literally Echav, but all of those who were also members of the Kuna were going to be acted. Uzrubavel ben Shealtiel, and then there was also Zerubbabel, and Echav, those who were also from the leading family. Vayivnu et Mizbach Elohei Yisrael, Le'alot alav olot kakatuv b'torat Moshe ish Elohim. And so they wanted to get moving, as we'll see in a moment. And therefore, even before they built any kind of bayit, before they even were yaseid a bayit, they built the Beit HaMikdash. Now the Mishnah in Idiot, which the Gemara discusses at length, says that Omar Rabbi Yeshua shamati shemakrivim afa pishein bayit. So Rabbi Yeshua says that I was mikubo from my rabbeim that you can bring korbanot without any bayit that's built. You're allowed to eat kotshe kotshim in the area that was the azara, despite the fact that there are no mechitzot. You can eat kotshim kalim ma'aser sheni in what was the city, even though there are no mechitzot, meaning the chomah of Yerushalayim was down. And the reason is that the spatial requirements of the Kiddusha, which we know creates pigol, even the machshava, there's a violation of any type of mechitza, does not mean literally a physical mechitza. It's possible to create Kiddusha, there's a particular ceremony which you need to do, and we're going to get to that later, how they did it, now the Gemara learns out what they did. But the reason is, says the Mishnah, shekiddusha rishona kiddusha l'sha'ata v'kiddusha l'atid lavo. The original Kiddusha, at the time of the Knesset La'aretz, this is what many understand it to mean, was Kadosh for the future as well. Lamaisa, as the Rambam explains in many of the Rishonim, how to understand the Pesach of this Mishnah, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yoshua. The Rambam understands that the reference over here is only and uniquely to Yerushalayim and to the Beit HaMikdash, not to Eretz Yisrael as a whole. When it comes to the rest of Eretz Yisrael, this comes out from the Sugya. When it comes to the rest of Eretz Yisrael, it required a re-consecration of, in order to give it the dinim of Eretz Yisrael, in terms of trumas, meisers, shemitahs, yevahs, and so on. And that is also problematic because many of those dinim are dependent on the Yisrael actually being settled in their Nachlan. You cannot simply consecrate. The Rambam's Lashon is, why do I say, he says, Walama ani omer, b'migdash v'Yerushalayim, k'dusha rishona, k'dushatam latid lavo, v'kedushat shar eretz Yisrael, v'inyan shvi'it, ma'asrot, v'chayotzei behem, lo k'dusha latid lavo. Very simple, says the Rambam. L'fish k'dushat ha'migdash v'Yerushalayim comes not because of the kivush of Eretz Yisrael, as a matter of fact, it didn't come at that time, it came later. The kedusha is mipnei hashchina. It was the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was bashu the shchina there. And shchina ina betela. The shchina is never bottle. And that, what we take as this, sort of emotional statement of Yolam Lusas Shchina Mikoto Maravi, is actually a halachic statement. It's based on the pasuk which the Rambam brings. Vareyu omer v'hashimoti et migdashechem. I will destroy your migdash. Note that even after v'hashimoti, it's still called your migdash. And I should say, the house that was your migdash, and it's no longer migdash. Amru chachamim, af al pi shishomamin bigdushatan hin omdim. As opposed to the other chiyuvim, ma'aras, b'shvias, ma'asrot, and so on, elno ela mipnei kivush rabim. The moment, so it's only because of the actual conquest of the land. The moment that the land was taken away, the conquest is no longer there. So kivan shenil kecha aretz miyadehim, obviously batel hakibush. So the kibush is an ongoing reality. What the leftists talk about, hakibush, so in fact, that's the whole point. In other words, the kiddush of Eretz Yisrael is dependent specifically in kibush. Now, there are other mekorot to kiddusha, which can come from the gift of the Ami, or the malchut granting Eretz Yisrael. That's a whole different discussion. But kibush, per se, is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's the mekor of kiddushat Eretz Yisrael. Because of that, there was no way in which it could retain its kiddusha. However, continues the Rambam. Afterwards, kivan sha'ala Ezra v'kitcha. When Ezra came and was mekadesh Eretz Yisrael, that kiddusha was not bottled. Why? Because he wasn't called at Magdash at Bekibush. There was no kibush. There was a license to come. That license, at that point, was a chazaka, shechzikuba. So it was given to them by the United Nations, in other words, by Koresh at the time, or by whatever malchut is there, which is why he says, Kol mamlechota, I'm ruler over everything. And God has told me to give this to you. Fine. Lefichach kol makom shechzikuba ole bavel, v'nitkadesh bekudushat Ezra Ashniya. Even if and in those places there's a chiyuv of shviyas masrot al derech shebiyarnu bilchot truma. That's the lashon of the Ram. So that means that we have really three types of kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. Kedusha that is nogea halacha. There's also obviously the ma'ala of Eretz Yisrael per se, which has nothing to do with the specific halacha of kedusha, where Avram Avinu was chomed that land for himself, as the Medrash says, as soon as he reached Rosh HaNikra. He said, this is exactly where I want to be. And there was the original netina of Eretz Yisrael was before there were any of these dargot of kedusha. But in any event, besides the actual ma'ala of Eretz Yisrael itself, so we have here the kedusha of kibush, the kedusha of hazakah, and the kedusha of shechina. It's kibush and only kibush which becomes bottle because it's dependent on the maintenance of your rights. If you can't maintain your rights, then you lose your rights. Simple as that. So this, according to the Pashas, according to Rabbi Yeshua, is what's going on over here. Since they were being sedech on the Kedusha Rishona, they didn't need actual mechitzes. There's a question, the Gemara, about the Shita in this Mishnah of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, Shamati, the only Shamati is because he's a Mishnayot in Idiot. And in Idiot, everybody's repeating over in Kerem B'Yavna what it is that they were Mekabel, so that way they would be Shemeret as the Seder of the Mishnah. So Shamati kishu hayu bonim beichal. While they were building the Heichal, Osim Klaim Leheichal, Uklaim Lazarot, they built a mechitza, but they built mechitzas out of curtains, just like at the time of the Mishkan. So that the Gemara takes that to mean that he seems to be saying that you do need a physical mechitza, which would imply that the Kedusha Rishona was Betela. And that's the Gemara's Havamina, that there's a machloket between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua as to whether Kedusha Rishona is Kitchel HaShata v'Kitchel HaTid Lavo or not. In the end, the Gemara says, there's no indication here at all that he holds that you need the mechitza, because it may well be that he's simply saying what he heard, that the word. In other words, in order to avoid a lack of any sense of propriety, dignity, and tzniut, what is this type of field in which you're bringing carbones and so on? So in order to avoid that sense of impropriety, they put up klayim. But who's to say it was for anything other than tzniut mi'alma, and not for the actual din? In the end, the Gemara does identify shitot that clearly hold lo kichalati davo, but not necessarily is Rabbi Eliezer part of that. So in any event, this reflects very strongly on what is happening over here. So they immediately began building bringing korbanot, and this was before anything at all had happened. So continues the pasuk. They built the mizbeach precisely where it had been, and that is the Rambam tells us. The iser of bringing on a bama is chal even after the korban of the Beis Hamikdash, never becomes mutter again. And the place of the mizbeach was defined by, as the Gemara tells us, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi had to come b'neviut to identify where that place was. Or, according to another mandioma, they actually, when they came, because of their darga, they were able to identify the ashes of Yitzchak. So Ephrosh and Yitzchak they found there, and that was their insight into the Makom HaMizbeach. And they built it exactly where it was, and the reason that they did this is because, even though they would have liked to do it the way that Shlomo did it, in other words, first build a building and make it really chashuv, and then make a whole ceremony and bring in the Mizbeach and start the Karbonos, and we're going to see many times, we've spoken about it already on three occasions, things that they do that are there specifically to do it the way it had been done originally. This they didn't do, and since it's so clear that they didn't do it, the Pasuk feels that it needs to explain why did they do it backwards in this way. They were terrified of the possible political implications of delay. So they didn't want to wait until they had a bayit, which would give people a long time to stop what they were doing, which is actually what happened in the end. And they figured that if they start immediately bringing karbanos, and they do this openly so that it's clear that they have a license from Koresh, that they would never openly defy the king, that way, maybe that itself would make it a fait accompli. So it's very similar to the type of things that were done in the settling of Eretz Yisrael in the early days of the Yishuv, where in the middle of the night you would go, and that's the Choma Migdal period, where you would go and you would simply set up overnight, you would set up Uvdot Basheta, so that the next morning there was already a town there. And here too, they wanted to make a Mizbeach to prevent any kind of delays. Vayalu alav olot ladunai, olot laboker v'la'erev. And then they started bringing the olot, meaning the Tomit Shel Shachar, and the Tomit Shel Bein Arba'in, and that was it initially. And then, 15 days later, when it came to Sukkot, vayasu et chag haSukkot kakatuv, this, you can imagine that it was extremely difficult to go directly at this most complicated of all of the chagim in terms of what you need to do for the Mizbeach and so on, the Shivim Purim. And so they started on Rosh Hashanah with the Karbanos of Rosh Hashanah, began getting people into the modality of the Avodas, the teaching them, the training them. So they were only bringing, they still weren't bringing the Dharm for the Davot. They only were bringing, this is called Haratzah in modern Hebrew, run it through. They had just the Olat HaTamid, Baboker Uba'erev. But when it came to Chag HaSukkot, then already they were prepared to do Olat Yom B'Yom, Kemispar, Kemishpat, Dvar Yom B'Yomo. They started bringing all of the Korbanot HaChag as they were meant to be brought initially. V'acharechein, and then afterwards it became already set. They would bring the Olat HaTamid, for Rosh Chodesh, they would bring the korban for Rosh Chodesh. For all of the Moadei Adonai HaMekudashim, not only that, they began to accept Mitnadev Nedava. So they even started to bring Lakol Mitnadev Nedava Adonai. And this began, Miyom Echad LaChodesh HaShavi'i, Hechelu La'alot Olot Adonai, despite the fact V'Hechal Adonai Lo Yusad. So from the first day of Rosh Hashanah, they began to bring these korbanot, despite the fact that there was no Hechal. And that explains why it is that we have this stress entirely on Yeshua HaKohen instead of on Zerubbabel, because the tafkid of the Melech, as we saw in Melachim, and his responsibility for the Binyan of the Beit HaMikdash, was a Shlomo, was the actual Bayit, Beit Hashem. He was the one that went to Tzora, and he was the one that created the political alliances that would make the Binyan HaBayit practical. Wait, just one moment. Whereas Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel here was still had his hands tied, and therefore was unable to do so. Now this, by the way, the story of Zerubbabel is I mentioned it briefly before, but it's an amazing story, because we saw at the end of the story of the Churban, that his father, basically, Bnei Yechonya, which includes Shealtiel, was cursed like nobody else. As HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Kitvu et ha'ish hazeh ariri, this is a man who should never have any children. Gever lo yitzlach bi'amav, a man who has no future. Ki lo yitzlach mizaro ish yoshev ha'kisei David. There will never be a man sitting on the throne of David. There won't even be a man that will be Moshel od b'Yehuda, even with as a governor. This guy's finished. And then after the Galut, who do we find comes? Shealtiel. This is Bnei Yechonya, Asir Beno, Shealtiel Beno, which, as we said yesterday, implies that Shealtiel is actually a grandson, because there's two Benos in between. The reason that he's called Shealtiel is because he was conceived only through the interference of God. What happened? Remember they had put Yechonya in a cell, which wasn't even able, they tortured him. Wasn't even able to sit down. He certainly did not have any conjugal rights. What they did was they lowered his wife with a rope so that he could only have intercourse with her standing up. Normally, says the Gemara, it's very difficult to have a child standing up. Sperm falls out. You don't really get conception. Over here, Shalto El Kedlo Kederach Hanishtalim. God implanted him in a way that required special Gemiri She'ena Yisha B'taberet Me'umad Ve'yin Nitabra Me'umad. So normally we don't expect to get a pregnancy in that way. And over here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was shotel him in this fashion. But another beautiful meaning of Sha'altiel is Sha'al El Al-Alato. God had sworn, he says, this can't be, I'm telling you, it's not going to happen. He had to go, so to the Kaviyocho, to get a heter for this curse. It was together a kalala similar to a shvuah. It was literally a shvuah. So, Sha'al El Al-Alato, Sha'alti El. God had to ask to get a heter from the Chachamim on his Allah. Another meaning, why is it Sha'alti El Ben Zerubavel? Sha'alti El Shenizra Bibavel. The Gemara, remarkably, sees the identity of Sha'altiel as actually being identical with Nehemiah. Now remember that the Ma'ashema and Nehemiah ben Chachlaya Shema. This is what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. But remember that the understanding of Shemot in the Gemara, in Divrei Hayomim and in all of these areas, is very different than the way it is in the rest of the Torah. And again, as the Gemara put it, we know that you play games here. Kol dvarech ha'echod va'anu yod'in. We know how to interpret. So in other words, names are used over here to indicate all types of elements of information that may not be related directly to the person as the particular individual that we have. So it's not so partial, as the Zohar explains, to look at names as being a simple one-to-one correspondence to a person. Oftentimes you'll have 20 different people who are all called the children of so-and-so and of so-and-so. And the Gemara says this is all different facets of the same identity. So again, that he's called Nehemiah could be in elements. He's associated directly with Nehemiah. Vayitnu kesev lachotzvim v'lachorashim u'ma'akal u'mishteh v'shemen latzidonim v'latzorim. Lavi atzei arazim in alavanon el yam yafo k'rishyon koresh melech paras alehem. So continuing now exactly what it was that had been done by Shlomo HaMelech, in which he contracted with the master builders and with the here the Chotzvim are the stone workers, and the Harashim are the master builders that are famous for their work with the Atzei HaLevanon. And this they did through Tzidon and Sor, exactly what Shlomo had done, arranged as he did for sending rafts of Arazim down the Mediterranean to land in Yafo. This needed to be done with the license that had been provided by Koresh Melech Paras, because after all of the Atzei HaLevanon was actually the property of the Malchut, and it was specifically here, and this was the most expensive thing that they were going to be involved in, since Koresh had told them that it was going to be, we're going to see later on. In the Pasuk, we get the details of the license that was provided for them, that this was actually supposed to be paid for by the government, which is the only way that they were able to, this would have been unbelievably expensive. And of course, in Malachim, we learn about the expense and the number of people that were involved. Now, this was a tremendous, tremendous outlay, which caused later on some of the elements of the rebellion against Shlomo because of the massive undertaking in taxes that needed to provide for this kind of money. Over here, they actually had the license of Koresh, which was meant to cover the costs. And we'll see in Aramaic, we're going to be switching to Aramaic soon when we go into the original document. Sorry. We're going to be switching when we get to the original original documents, and we'll be talking about exactly what the license said. All right, so here we are now in this next parasha. There's a petucha here. And so, ubashana hashenit, in the second year, lebavam el beit elohim leYerushalayim, b'chodesh hashenit, this time they came in Iyar. And it was then that they began. And now, look at how it switched. Hechelu Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel first, and then Yehoshua ben Yotzadak, because now they started to actually begin the Sidorim of building. And therefore, he's put first here. So it was at that time. Why was it the Chodesh HaSheni? Because that's exactly what Shlomo had started doing. So the idea was, we're trying to do everything as we've seen this theme throughout. We're trying to recreate. So they came in the Chodesh HaSheni, came along now. At this point, Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel, together with the Kohen HaGadol, Shara Chayem, HaKohanim VaLevim, together with Chol HaBaim Miyashvi Yerushalayim, from all those who had been in Yerushalayim before, and who were the ones that were the leaders, Vayamidu et Alevim, they now were Bodek the Levim, and remember there's a halacha of teaching the Levim, and so on, that we learn out from the Pesukim, Miben Esrim Shana V'Mala, Linatzeach Avalechet Beit Adonai. And so they appointed them to be the ones in charge. Now, in charge, as Rashi points out, is remarkable because in Lashon HaKodesh, in charge has a double meaning. It means orchestration. Of course, I mean, in English also, and as I say, to orchestrate something is not only musical, but in Hebrew, the people that were orchestrating were actually orchestrating. That's the amazing thing. This goes so deeply that the Gemara in Erechim points out that the kalim that were used for the Aveda could double as musical instrument. So it talks about a shovel that they had that they would use to clean off the Mizbeach that was capable of generating 100 tones across all of those octaves. According to some, 1,000 even tones. They do all types of sharps. It's like amazing. And this is like a shovel. So the idea is that, as Rashi points out over here, the need for music, which we saw yesterday, was so important that they brought along an orchestra of 200 people along the road. Forget about before they even got to the Beis HaMikdash. This was besides the Mishorim and the Sharim that they had spoken about before. 200 people strong orchestra, because as the Mefarshim say, it was absolutely essential to come up with a sense of excitement, dignity, and the placement that only music can give you. Here, for the Avoda, that was not only, we take it as, you know, okay, it's supposed to be this way for the Aveda. This wasn't for the Aveda. This was for the actual building. And the Lanatseach, this is the Mefarshim saying, this is Laminatseach, Mizmar LeDavid. And that's the Shnei Nitzachot. It's two completely different things. Both to say Shira, Ulenagen Be'et HaBinyan, as the Mitzvah points out. Not Be'et HaAvodah, but as the building is going up, it has to go up to music. That's an amazing thing. It really, it brings out the extent in which if things are done without the awareness that's given to a person of the expansion of the overall sense, what music does for you, that it expands your mind, it forces you out of the present, because obviously it doesn't even make sense completely in the present. Music forces you to live within a field, because otherwise it doesn't do anything. It's only because you're sensitive to what's coming, the future, you're sensitive to what has been, and your present extends now into the past and into the future. Otherwise it isn't music, it's just noise. And because of that, all of the inyanim of Ashras HaShchina, as we saw in the Gemara, is dependent on music. That's the Vayikin Agen Amin Agen. All of the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, which is the expression of Ruach HaKadosh in the Beis HaMikdash, is all in terms of music specifically. And in general, Kabbalistically speaking, music is essential for Teshuvah, that's Echal HaNegina, because that's what Teshuvah is gaining that perspective, that integration that is essentially musical. And it's exactly as we feel. To walk through a day without music is to be stuck in a life that is completely involved in its moment, and it's very difficult to get out of it. So here, the building itself resounded with music. And we even talk about this when we daven about the restoration of the Beis HaMikdash. So what do we say? The Shirei David Avdecha, Nishmaim Birecha. So what does that have to do with it? What do we need music for? It's part of the actual restoration in which we're mitpalel to say we're going to build the Beit HaMikdash. We want to hear that music. That's really a musical vision that they brought with them. Huh? The building itself. That's the point. They didn't have the standard the music, stam, before, whatever they were doing with the karbonis they were doing. But here, in order to begin the building, and as Ezra pointed out, that's why Zerubbabel suddenly appears over here. And this is as the Metzudas points out, Ledat Seach, on music Be'et HaBinyan. I have to stop. Vayamud Yeshua Banav Yachav Kadmielu Banav Bnei Yehuda. This is to distinguish them now from the. There was also another Kadmiel, as we're going to see later on in Nehemiah, who was from the Bnei Chendad, who was actually also involved here. And then we want to make very clear that although the Bnei Chendad, as we'll see, were responsible for the building, the Kadmiel that is being referred to over here were the children of Yehuda, not Chendad. So they were appointed together, Lenatzeach al Osei Hamilacha, Beveta Elohim. These were now the individuals who were the ones who were in charge of the actual, there was the supervisors of the workers who would be working in the actual Beit Hashem. B'nei Chenadad, B'neihem, V'acheihem, Halaviyim. A very interesting name, this Chenadad. We have similar name in Eldad, maybe. You know, Eldad, Medad, Chenadad, which seems to be talking about pretty nipples, which is sort of a strange kind
it's
of...
Pretty.
Yeah, it's a pretty name. But it may also mean chen of the dove, chen of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or those, in other words, those who have found chen in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We know that Eldad and Medad also. Reference back, we have the two dadim, in other words, the Aron HaBrit, which is represented by two breasts, basically. They become Moshe Aaron, such that Eldad and Medad were the ones that were left out, also were specifically called in order to become Nevi'im directly by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this may have actually related back to Linatzer. This is the reason why it's in the song, by the way. So in the Kel Mestater song, it goes through all of the Midas. The Linatzeach HaMelechet Beit Hashem actually has to do with the Midas of Netzach Vahod there. Netzach Vahod Mehem Nimtzayim, and that actually, Netzach Vahod are the two nipples, is one of the elements of Netzach Vahod on the body, so that it may really be that Chen Adad is a Kabbalistic reference as well. Vayizdu habunim et echal Adonai, and so the builders now began in the foundations, and at that point, they actually brought Kohanim. Vayamidu hakohanim melubashim bechatzotzrot. So here the Kohanim were dressed up in the big day kahuna. And according to the Rambam, this is Machlokas Rambam and Raifat, but you're not allowed to wear the big kahuna shalobashat kahuna at all. And what it means over here is that they put on the big day kahuna for the tzorech of this. And apparently, as the Marble Mars, this was a hora'at sha'ah, that they should be blowing on the chatzotzrot, because the truth is there's no din of chatzotzrot, except where it's no gay, a specific moed, so that they viewed the yisod of the bayit as a holiday. So they actually dressed the kohanim and had them blowing chatzotzrot as a special hora'at sha'ah. V'halaviyim b'nei Asaf b'mitziltayim lehalel et Adonai al yedei David melech Yisrael. And had now the singers, these were the famous B'nai Asaf, these were the ones who were on the orchestra as well, and they brought them with the Mitzaltayim, and we know that the cymbals were very much an important part. Many people are not aware of the musical versatility of cymbal. People look at it very much, there's a type of cymbals which is called the crash cymbals. That's what people are used to, which is just smashing the pieces of metal against each other. But the fact is that it's one of the most versatile instruments, surprisingly. And there are many, many different types, many different shapes, and a good player is capable of actually making himself heard above an entire orchestra because of the nature of the timbre of the Mitziltayim. And that's why we find there's so much of a stress on it in throughout Tehillim. And here they brought, sorry?
More like a steel drum?
Or no. The regular cymbals, if you rub the... No, there's actual different tones that can be made from different places of the cymbal. As, in other words, there's the mid part, which is called the cup or the bell, and as it goes along towards the edge, depending on how you rub it, the direction, so you can get also very, very different levels of volume out of it. If you're careful, it's going to be very. I mean, I'm sure you've heard compositions in which you have a delicate background of sort of a swishing sound, which are from cymbals and so on. Okay, so that this was now in order to be Mahalal Hashem. We're going to see something about this halal in a moment, but this is specifically Ayyadei David Melech Yisrael. This is something I think I mentioned before that we even mentioned in our tefillahs. Ufshirei David Avdecha, Nishmaim Beirecha, Amurim Lifnei Mizbechecha, that what we had over here, as we saw earlier, that this is Bedavka, the Melech now who is in charge. We switched from before when Yeshua, Kohen HaGadol, was the one that was in charge in terms of the Korban. Here we're talking about being in charge in terms of the Binyan. The idea that most people have in their minds is that David was a king and a poet. No, so he wrote nice poetry, which is Ne'im Zmirot Yisrael, which is not connected with the fact that he's also king. I mean, it was, you know, poetry and the kingship are not related. But Lamaisa, the idea of being Meyaseh, the Shirin, specifically through the Melech Yisrael, and not just any Melech, but the one who was Zochet, the Keter Malchut of Yisrael, is, of course, not coincidental. And that's because if you consider the interrelationship between the concept of Malchut, the concept of poetry, and the concept of music, it will become rather clear to you that these are three different elements of integrative and emergent behavior that are part of the nature of Malchut. Not that poetry is vaguely related to Malchut. And because, I mean, that's, you can see this in the Torah as well. As we get closer to the end of the Torah and to the real acceptance of Brit and restatement of the nature of things, as Moshe Rabbeinu sees it in its entirety, the language switches to poetry and is started to be called Shira, right? And then that's the Pshat, Kitvuat HaShira Hazot. And then as the music and the leaders led this Hallel, Vaya'anu b'Hallel u'b'Hodot l'Adonai ki tov ki le'olam chasdo Yisrael. So then they had a choir, usually aniyah means loud. So, and that's what we say, onim. We have those that are onim. Even to take a look in your siddur, you have the Shliach Tzibur says, and then the Kahal is onem. Hallel, of course, is always like that. The whole idea of Hallel is Hodula Hashem Yitov, and Onim Kilimam Chasto. So here, the Aniyah was specifically two issues. Hallel and Hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whose tova on Yisrael was even in this situation, Kili Olam Chasto. But what's interesting is, as the Malbum points out, V'chol he'am ha'am he'riu teruaga gedola behalel Adonai. All of the people that were standing around, and was besides the singers, the orchestra, and the choir, all of the tzibur as a whole would shout out, and he'riu is also with the truah, with shofar, but also by shouting, he'riu. It doesn't mention over here, l'behodot. It only says behalel. Now we'll see why he suggested that would be true in a moment. And this was al-husad that was at the beginning of the yesod. And of course, this is going to take a very long time, as we're about to see. V'rabim mi'akohanim v'halviyim v'roshei ha'avot hazekenim. Now many of these leaders, those who had been in charge before, remember that we said these were the ones that specifically had come from Yerushalayim. These were the ones that were the early golim, and had remembered the bayit as it was. They had been sent away even before the Churban. And again, this idea of we're going to go back home, they had this, as people usually do, they have a vision of going back home, and hadn't figured out you can't go back home again. But this is really what they had in their mind. And at this moment, this was the absolute disaster in their minds. I mean, this was the biggest tragedy imaginable. Because this really brought it home. This is what coming home means, sitting over here among the ruins, trying to put together with a small number of people, without any resources, and without anything that surrounds us, to try to put together a bayit in this way. They just broke down. So these, asher ra'u et habayit harishon biyazdo. Now there's the trup of the pasuk, the tamim of the pasuk, has the biyazdo together with harishon, harishon biyazdo. That's because yazdo has a double meaning, and it's clearly being used over here as a play on words, in the sense that biyazdo, as they were founding this bayit, those who had seen the bayit in its full glory, because that's the yesod of a thing that is completely built, so that biyazdo can mean the verb of as it is in the process of becoming founded, but it also means the foundation. We talk about, wow, you know, this is like the whole thing. So to them, the contrast between seeing the bayit harishon in its glory and this absurdity was so horrific that bochim bekol gadol, we would need to read it, asher ra'u. They saw two things. They saw at habayit harishon biyazdo, and they saw v'ra'u ze habayit be'enehem. Now, there are those who find that awkward and ignore, including Ibn Ezra, ignore the ta'amim to read biyazdo on this bayit, the Yazdozah bayit, or the Shira'u et bayit arishon, comma, which runs against the Tamim, the Yazdozah bayit beinahem bochim, because the double usage wasn't cleared. But if we take this approach, this is the approach that is taken by the Malbim, that it means actually this play on words of look at what we remember and look at what has begun here. It was horrible. And they don't only cry to themselves, but they're basically moaning. And Rabim bitura b'simcha la'rim kol. And on the other hand, you have all of these people, the newcomers, who are all excited, and of course have been coming with their symphony orchestra, accompanying them all the way, as we saw before, all the way from Bavel. And, you know, at last, here we are, and we're actually going to build a Beit HaMikdash, and they don't even have a sense of how paltry and poor and decayed this whole thing seems, because it's all that they ever knew. And so they're shouting, b'tshua, b'simcha, la'rim kol, Ve'in ha'am makirim kol tru'at ha'simcha l'kol b'chia'am. Now, the way that most, including Chazal, understand this, is that because we talked about in the Gemara about how many people could have there been. Well, what do you mean? It says over here that you couldn't even hear the sounds of the simcha because of the massive sounds of the people crying. And yet, it's hard to read that into the closing because it says, ki'am miri'im tru'ah gadol va'kol nishma ad l'merachok. So if you take that explanation, then it means that despite the fact that everybody was shouting with this kol simcha, nonetheless the call of the bochim was the thing that was mostly heard l'merachok. But others learn, ein ha'am makirin is in the sense of able to distinguish between. So in ha'am makirin, there was so much noise that was going on from so many different, there was the trot, and there was the la'arim kol, and there was the choir, and there was, throughout all of this, there's the sounds of crying, that it all blended into one massive noise, which contained all of these various elements in it, so that you could hear this very, very far away. Now, if that's the case, the Malbim suggests that the reason it doesn't say in the Kol Ha'ame Riu Truah Gedolah is because Bahalel and not Lahodot, is because they could not be Modeh. There were so many people that were miserable about it. What would it say? Thank you? But they're living the Churban here at the moment of Binyan. So the Lahodot wasn't part of their response. Now, this has extremely significant halachic ramifications, this entire chapter, because if you think about it, this describes precisely the return to Eretz Yisrael in our times. People had no concept of what Judaism is, what Eretz Yisrael is meant to be. They're running around the streets and they're clapping and they're doing the Hora, exactly, and this is the most wonderful thing. And then you have other people who do have some concept that they're saying Tachanun and crying. And this goes on every Yom HaAtzmaut. I mean, it's exactly like this. It's astounding. This describes the situation of Shivat Zion when there's so many different levels of what is possible. Now, we're used to thinking, so who's right? Over here, remarkably, they're both right. Not only are they both right, but according to the Pirush of Ein HaMakirim, that you can't differentiate is the sense that they both support each other. In other words, you need both of these elements in order to have this ultimate expression of what is really going on here. Obviously, something immensely important is going on, even though it appears so sad. And on the other hand, the challenges of how far you have to go need to be understood at the same time. There's no contradiction between the two. Although in the emotive sense, yeah, a tremendous contradiction. How am I supposed to be modeh when I feel so miserable? What does I say, Baruch Dayanamis? I mean, what kind of hoda'ah is that? I could say Baruch Dayanamis, Besimcha, but I mean, that's not called hoda'ah, obviously. And yet, remarkably, according to that pshat, even the ones who couldn't say modeh would still say halal. Now that could be no geala halacha. In other words, they were saying halal, not necessarily because it's good. I'm not ready to say it's good. I won't say hodol Hashem kitov. I won't say kitov because I don't see the good in it. But the fact that this is an undeniable historic moment in which we sense the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, see it as an opening for the future and as a pekida that will change everything, still requires halal, despite the fact that there's no hodol. So that itself may have tremendously important implications. I know Rabbi Barnea remembers that we used to read this on Yom HaAtzmaut. Look, I want to stress again, this book is a very confused book. It's so utterly confused.
Confusing.
Confused. That it's got to be, that it's meant to be a confused book. There's no attempt to put things in any time order at all. Chronology is like out the window. If you attempt to make sense chronologically, you run into the most strange roundabout pshatim and so on. The best way to read the book is to see it as an overall attempt to almost give a freestyle narrative of confusion. Because what we do is we just want to give you throwing together the feelings of the people that were there. The total number of people from all different walks of life over a long period of time. The building that takes place also, we're going to see, we have to split. Everything here has to be parsed. We put things together as if they're all together. But the truth is, sometimes we're talking about a period of 18 years that a single parak really takes place in. And then, as we're going to get into now, the problems, the political problems, for sure, stretch from immediately after Koresh through the story of Esther and Achashverosh and the death of Achashverosh, Daryovesh, their child. And it's all like just thrown in here as if it's the same people. With the names keep running around in circles. We talked about the Gemara that actually says there are Tachshatza and Achashverosh and Daryovesh, Koresh, all the same thing. Obviously, they're not all literally the same person. We know that we had four separate individuals that are involved, and yet the names indeed are used as codes to different types of behavior of these people. Just like Paro, Artakshata, are similar ideas in that each Malchut has aspects that we call the Melech always. And I think it's very kedai for us to get into a mode in which we're feeling more what it is the book is trying to give us as a free narrative. It's almost as if somebody's talking to a psychiatrist. And then there was that letter, and then they start talking in Aramaic about what that letter is. But that letter is six different letters that were sent from different kings at different times with the end result, the beginning result, and the interactions with the people, and the list of names that takes place at different times. It's free talking on a psychiatrist's couch. And I think that is exactly the point. The only way to get you there into the feelings that were going on is not to tell you about it as if it's the outside, but to let you become immersed in the feelings. And this is the first time you can really, really feel this. When you're sitting there between a hollow and a tears and a crying, and I like, so where do you stand on all of this? And this goes on, as we will see now in the next parak. Now here's some additional material referring from the Gemara in Zevachim to Pasuk Gimel, the rebuilding of the Mizbeach. Continues the Mishnah. At the time of Ezra, they added another four amot to make it 32 by 32. The direction of the addition was towards the south and towards the west. Kimin Gama. So they added four amot, like an L, and they made it 32 by 32. Such now that we have 28 by 20, the shear rather on top adds to is the 24 by 24. We only have to take off two amot yisod, even though obviously we're calling yisod not necessarily it was a binyan yisod. Two amot sove, two amot of the kronot, meaning one on either side, and two amot for the makom hilah for ragle hakohanim. So now we deduct from our 32, and we now come down to 24 by 24 instead of 20 by 20. Okay. Why did they have to add when they came at the time of Ezra? Yes. I mean, you think small potatoes. Were they making a bigger mizbeach for? Amar Rav Yosef, b'shem d'lo sipei, wasn't big enough. I'm going to buy it. What do you mean, wasn't big enough? Hashta mikdash rishon dechtibe Yehuda v'Yisroel rabim kechol asher al hayam. So for millions of people, it was enough to bring korbanot on the original tiny mizbeach of Shlomo. But when they came with their measly 40,000 people, all of a sudden, we don't have any money. How many carbonas are they bringing? All of a sudden, it wasn't big enough. And over here, kol ha-kahal ke-achad mikasheni l'chtibe. Kol ha-kahal ke-achad arba ribo. Lo sipe. Says Rabbi Yosef, what's the problem? The time when they were building the first Beis HaMikdash, they had the Eish Men HaShamayim. That was able to sizzle a fox in no time at all. So hatam Eish HaShamayim misayatam. So you didn't need a lot of space. But hacha, over here, they no longer were zeicha to the Eish Men HaShamayim, and therefore they had to use old-fashioned fire. How the heck you burn all entire animals? Huh?
Wet, soggy,
mashed. Yeah, exactly. The whole thing was wet and soggy, something like a fox. Where everything is just ugh. And then the fire barely burns. And then they needed to have more space. Makes a lot of sense. That isn't the issue. It's a completely different issue. They needed to build the Mizbeach bigger, not because they needed more Zayin. They needed to build the Mizbeach bigger because they wanted to incorporate the Shittin into the Mizbeach. Now, we know that there used to be, and this is all the way from Maaseh Bereishis, Bereishit means Borashit. So there were shittim that were underneath, there were these little tubes, passageways that went underneath the Mokam HaMizbeach that allowed the Nesachim of the Mizbeach to go down into the Tohom. This was part of the entire development of the earth in which HaKadosh Baruch was Mavdol ben HaMayim Elyonim, Mayim HaTachtonim. This was part of that entire Havdolah period. So originally, those shittim were at the corner, the edge of the Mizbeach. They would pour Nesachim on the Mizbeach. The Nesachim would dribble down the outside of the Mizbeach and go into the shittim. Then they held, when they came back, this is remarkable, is that they darshaned differently than the way Shlomo had darshaned. They didn't hold of Shlomo's way of doing it. So all of those centuries, which everybody was perfectly happy to have the Shittin outside of his bath, they said, that's wrong. Which, of course, is the halacha. You're supposed to follow the most recent sign. So they posit that they darshaned like this. Mikorasovar, back at the time of Shlomo, the way that they understood the pasuk of Mizbeach Adama, Mizbeach Adama. In other words, is it that the whole point of Adama is that it's like a gush, completely sealed up. A tomb, it means ba'adama. It's like when you pour dirt into something, there's no place for anything else. Besof savur, but then they said, in which case, what are you going to do with the shittim? If you make them mizbeach adama on top of the shittim, then you don't have anywhere to pour the nesachim. Must be that the mizbeach was built right up to the edge of the shittim, and then when you poured the nesachim, they would dribble down the side, come off, and flow into the shittim. They, when they came up to build the second Beit HaMikdash, they were the Besof Savur, that Shtiyah Ke'achila. Look, the Mizbeach eats and has to drink. And that's part of the pasuk. The Torah talks about it. It drinks Yein Nesicha. So the Mizbeach is not only a predator. I mean, predators don't only eat, they also have to drink. In which case, just as the Achila is on the Mizbeach itself, so the Shtiyah has to be swallowed by the Mizbeach. How are you swallowing anything? By pouring things down the side of your neck. Where's the swallowing? Try doing that to a poor guy who's on a hospital bed. You pour something down his neck. It's got to get into his mouth. So therefore, we have to give the Mizbeach a mouth for drinking. The only way to do that is to incorporate the Shittim into the Mizbeach itself. Therefore, they extended the Mizbeach so that the Shittim would now be on the edge of the Mizbeach. But wait a minute, does it not say Mizbeach Adama? Doesn't that mean to close the whole thing up? No. They darshan that to mean, as we saw earlier, Shetehe Mechubar Ba'adama, Shelo Yivnenu Lo Agabe Kipin, Velo Agabe Mechilot, means that it has to be built, as we saw earlier. Remember, we were talking about, can you dig under the Mizbeach and have that place that's under the Mizbeach be kosher for Tzofai? No, that would be ridiculous, because then the Mizbeach would be Nifa. This is the point over here as well. This is the core of that halach. Then Rabbi Yosef, you'll remember that Rabbi Yosef had forgotten much of his learning when he got ill, and he would sometimes say something when he had forgotten what he had originally said about it, which is what happened over here. His answer to Abaye is, you need a larger Mizbeach because you don't have the Eish Ben HaShemayim that is helping you. But then he suddenly recalled, wait a minute, that's not what I said 30 years ago. It was a different shot. I remember. Amar Rabbi Yosef, wait, Lan Haina D'Tanya, wasn't that the incredible bright? That says that when they came up during the time of Ezra, so these were the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah that came up. Remarkably, they knew more than Shlomo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was megala to them issues that Shlomo HaMelech had never been oymed on. And therefore, they changed the size of the Mizbeach. What happened was, remember the Pasuk says, Vayachinu HaMizbeach HaMechonotav. The very words we just read. So Vayachinu Mizbeach HaMechonotav, what does Mechonotav mean? It's ultimate Machon. L'sof Midotav. They were the ones who really reached an understanding of precisely where a Mizbeach could be. And therefore, they built it to 32 by 32, where Shlomo HaMelech was misupak. Therefore, he had to keep it smaller to make sure that it was on the correct place, because he didn't want to go over and beyond the correct placement of the Mizbeach. Being as he couldn't get as exact as necessary, obviously, the less you understand something, the more vague you have to be about its boundaries. You can't take any chances. But the more precise you are, the more exact you can come up to the very edge of it. that life on the air. And therefore, they were able to do things that Shlomo wasn't able to do. And Chacham Mikalorim doesn't mean he knows everything that anybody's going to be derech in the future. You can argue with him. Oh, ask the Gemara as our president. Ask, wasn't there a map? V'ktiv ha'kol b'ktav miyad Hashem alai hiskil? Does it not say that everything had been given to me, written down, the entire architectural diagram had been given over to David by the Nevi'im? Remember when he was learning with Shmuel Anavi, and he had the Maradarshans and the Yerushalmi, that alai hiskil means you have a right to be derish that, and that it was given b'ruach ha'kodesh, alai is b'ruach ha'kodesh. So what do you mean he didn't know? I should make that more clear, said Rabbi Yosef. It isn't that they knew more. It's that they found a pasuk and they were derish it in a way that Shlomo HaMelech was not derish. Vayomer David. They have this pasuk, and of course it would have been rather hard for Shlomo to be derish this pasuk since it was in Divrei Hayomim, but not really, of course, because it was the words that David was known. So Vayomer David. Zehu Beit Hashem Elohim v'zeh Mizbeach Ol Mizbeach Le'olah LeYisrael. Oh, so in other words, he's comparing here in this passage the Mizbeach Le'olah LeYisrael to the Beit Hashem Elohim. In which case, it must be that they have the same din. And even if you have an architectural diagram, that may be only the first mode in which you build it. If you find reason for expansion, we're going to also let you know that ultimately it's expandable. What's the ultimately expandable? Kibayit. Just like the bayit, the hekel itself, is shishim amot, the mizbeach is ultimately able to be built along the area of shishim amot. But wait, there's another problem over here. The other problem is that when they came up with Ezra, they didn't have a GPS. So how did they know? I understand that they could figure out exactly where to put the bayit. I mean, that's not a problem. Because the bayit, after all, has deep foundations. They were able to take a radar reading of where those foundations were, just as Barnea has been. And they could still see the foundations. You know, so you do a little Yavna dig, and you get to the foundations, and then you build a bayit on those foundations. But how did they know precisely the midot of the Mizbeach? Over there, there's no minkara tzurato because it doesn't go underground. It's on top of the ground. And once it was destroyed, then there was nothing left. So how could they be precise about the Mizbeach? Omar, Rabbi Elazar, they had a vision in which they saw the Mizbeach there, and they saw Michael Asar HaGadol, that had come from the time of Daniel, of course. And he was there, and he was Emenu Makrivalav. Rav Yitzchak, who was a Navcha, and he always worked with fire, he was a smithy, he, of course, remembered that it was the ashes of Yitzchak that they saw on the Mizbeach. So the vision was not of Michael, but of the ashes of Yitzchak Avinu that were on that entire location. And that's what gave that Hashivas to the Mizbeach. So they saw Shemunach Batobako, and there is where they built the Mizbeach. Reb Shmuel Barnachna, obviously, there must have been some issues over here between Reb Chaim Noah, the Chazon Ish, and so on. I mean, L'chera, they had the bayit with the Yisodot. Once you know where the bayit is, then you know where the Mizbeach is. Why could they figure out the size of the Amot from the bayit itself? No, first of all, they're different size Amot. Secondly, is Machlokas, called the Mizbeach, was it the Emtza, and so on and so forth. These are big questions. How do they know exactly where to put the Mizbeach? Therefore, they must have had this simon. And Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmani said, look, it's very simple. They didn't see anything. Every place you walk in the Makom of the Beis HaMikdash, there was a Reach Kitoret. That, after all, is the simon of Gan Eden, Yarad Adi LeGano. That's all about the reconstruction of Gan Eden that the Bayit is. All of a sudden, they come to this place where they smell burning meat, Reach Evarim. So it's clear this was the place to build a Mizbeach for Evarim. Amar Rabba Baba Chan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shlosha Nevi'im, Aluim Ha'im in Agolah. Look, we'll be talking about over here building things on the basis of Chassidus HaMaisalah. There were three Nevi'im who came up with them from the Golah. This is Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. And one of them, Echad Ha'ir Al HaMizbeach, one was Bein on the Mizbeach, that indeed you have a right to be Maisif until Shishim. Wasn't that they relied on their own drasha? This is precisely where to put the Mizbeach. And the other one who told them, because we just saw that they were Makriv before they built the Heichal. How could they be Makriv without the Heichal? Because they had a psak that a Navi told them to be makrit. In other words, this teaches us that the Kedushat HaBayit, as the Rambam says, not necessarily, we're not paskin anything about Kedushat HaYisrael here, but the Kedushat of the Bayit being was Alpi Hashem, was Shechina, it came from the Hashras HaShechina, makrivin af Alpi She'en Bayit, bebatnita tana, the way the Braita puts it.